my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 411, to be broadcast on Wednesday, September 4th, 2024, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. I may be able to get back to you. Not so sure. Anyway, Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to send information over to the show or contribute information to the show and are listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week, 24%. Anyone watching the Vuelta? 24%. Do you believe how steep that is? Have you seen this? If you're not watching the Vuelta, I can't explain it. I just have to send you off to take a look and see what you think. But anyway, and my other rant of the week, we'll get back to this. We're back to school. All right, what's that mean? It means that we got to be a little more careful when we are riding around school zones or driving around school zones or even helping our young students ride their bicycles to school. So according to the National Traffic Highway Safety Administration, school zone accidents cause serious injuries to many children and teenagers across the country. Here are some of the most notable statistics, and we will get into that in the show. Well, let me just put this out here too. 1 in 4 high school students were observed to be distracted walkers. Nice, huh? 1 in 6 middle school students were observed to be distracted walkers, which tells me younger people follow their cell phones more so than older kids do. And of all the students that were observed crossing the street in an unsafe manner, 44% of the students were wearing headphones while in school zones. Parents, wake up, wake up, wake up. Time to wake up. Unplug them. There's a reason. Want my opinion? Why are so many kids driven to school? Yeah, that's my opinion. My opinion says that because there are so many parents that are driving their kids to school, there's more school zone accidents. This is not my, I'm not making this up, okay? We'll talk about it a little bit more in the show, including how much safer a school bus is than a car. We'll get to that in a minute. On a positive side, Mansfield Hall Cyclocross is coming. We are madly putting together the final pieces of the race, the field's mowed. It's being mowed again this morning. Dave's out there with his mower doing all sorts of fun stuff. And Dave and Keith and I, and maybe Jeremy also, we will all be down there just dressing it up and getting ready for those final little touches that are required to pull this race off on Sunday. By the way, if you are interested in helping us out in any way, go to our Facebook page and you can. We have a Mansfield Hollow Facebook page, a Bicycle Foot Talk Facebook page, my own personal Facebook page, the Thread City Cyclers Facebook page, and there's a sign-up sheet there. Sure could use some help. Anyway, moving on. The Vuelta is crazy this year. Crazy. Things are happening which are just completely absurd. Something absurd happened this morning. We won't even talk about that because I'm not going to do a spoiler alert on you. I'll let you find out when you get home and you get a chance to flip on the TV or read the reviews or watch your YouTubes or whatever it is. Yeah, it just gets crazier. But anyway, the Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tip of the Week. One by Chain Drops. I keep hearing about One by Chain Drops, and I keep talking to people who say, yeah, you know, I went to the One by, but, you know, without my front derailleur on there, I've got a problem. I keep dropping my chain. I dropped it 4 times in the last race. And so I did a little research on this, and there seems to be a solution, or at least close to a solution to the problem. And there's a company that makes a chain ring called Wolf Tooth, and we're gonna talk about that a little bit here. So this is just a review. This is not an endorsement in any way. It just seems to be a solution that a lot of people are talking about that seems to help with that chain drop up there in the front, reminding people that there are some factors involved with one buys. One is if you don't have a clutch rear derailleur. Yeah, that's an important piece right there. The clutch rear derailleur actually puts more tension on the chain, therefore wrapping the chain tighter and keeping it from bouncing off when you go over bumps and stuff. So there is a solution there, and this Wolf Tooth component, Drop Stop B, is a great option. It works flawlessly for thousands of miles with no drop chain, and it's quiet too, according to this person. Of course, this is just a review, so I'm just going to mention the fact that this could be a solution. I would seriously take a look at your rear derailleur and make sure you have a lot of tension on that rear derailleur, because you've only got one chain ring on the front. One chain ring on the front means that you really have to have a lot of tension. You have to have that chain exactly right. Also, it can't be too long, too short, especially too long, because that will cause a problem. So you want to pay attention to that. I still have the traditional double chain ring in the front, but I've got an interesting situation too, because I've changed my cross bike around to the point where I have I've got a modified a modified old triple crankset that I'm using on the front of my cross bike, but I only have 2 chain rings on it, the very tiny one and the middle one. And that opens another can of worms, but boy, does that give me a low gear. And it really helps a lot when you're going up really steep stuff. My lowest gear on that bike is lower than almost every one by out there on the market. So that's kind of cool. And it works, and they didn't have to go out and buy a new bike for it. So whatever, you know, I'm a mechanic. I fix things. I make things work. That's my game. So anyway, I figured I'd experiment with this, and it seems to work really good as long as you have the proper front derailleur and also everything else lining up properly. But that's my solution. But chain drop is an issue. I see it on people riding road bikes all the time. I'm out on group rides, and I would see people drop their chain before they're going up a hill. That's usually the place it happens, either going up the hill or halfway up the hill, because someone is putting way too much pressure on the pedals when they're pushing down the pedals, and then they try to shift, and the bike says, not doing that, and so then you get a chain drop. So that can be a problem. You need to shift gently, young grasshopper. You know, shift so that you're not putting a ton of pressure on those pedals at the same time, because that will really confuse your bike. It doesn't, you know, it's sort of like, I'm going to go back to the days when we used to drive cars which had clutches and gears. It's sort of like shifting your car without using the clutch. It just doesn't work as well. You can do it. You can do it. It's not recommended. It's not good for the machine, but you can do it. It just doesn't work as well, and it's going to cause a problem. So you want to try to stay away from that problem. Anyway, here we go. So the chainring here was a Wolf Tooth patented drop stop technology, which the company claims prevents chain derailment and increases longevity. The wide side of the tooth has a maximum contact on the drive side, which spreads the load and improves chainring life. The narrow side allows clearance for mud and debris, which reduces friction. The introduction of what it calls the drop stop B is a slight change to the chainring tooth profile and means it can run with SRAM AS 12 speed grip set. It uses the proprietary flat top chain that matches the new profile chain rings. It's also compatible with every other 9, 10, 11, and 12 speed chain. Its non-compatible chain wolf tooth list is the 12 speed Shimano HG found on mountain bike grip sets. So anyway, you can get them obviously in different configurations as far as that goes, but it seems to be a problem solver. So you might need to use shorter chainring bolts if you're doing a 1x. If you're taking a 2 and making it into a 1, you might need to do that. So you got to be aware of that sort of thing. You know, price-wise, it's not an inexpensive fix. I'm not going to talk prices here on the show because we're on public radio and that's not what we do. So we're going to avoid that. But it is a possibility that seems to work. It's retention and perfect chain retention and quiet in use, an excellent way to go with the single speed front chainring, the 1x chainring. So I don't know if it's a problem or solver or not. I would probably ask my listeners to give me some feedback on it. If you've used one of these things, I'd like to hear what you have to say. Again, I am not endorsing any products here. I'm just commenting on something that I did some research on, and chain drop is a very, very big deal. Why am I bringing it up now? Because it's cyclocross season, and a lot of the bikes that are coming in are now 1x. A lot of people are racing on 1x, and so this is a particular problem which occurs. That's my cycling tips of the week, and I'm going to leave it at that and then go back to what else we have here on tap for today. Content. Back to school. All right. Back to school. I talked a little bit about this. According to the National Safety, Highway Safety Administration, school zone accidents cause serious injuries to many students. Yes. Okay. So we did talk about that. We are going to take a look at this and what are the causes and the statistics? Well, first of all, I got to go back to something else that I started out saying earlier, and I'm kind of bouncing around here a little bit. How much safer is a school bus than a car? Bet you didn't know that one. That was my little trivia question, okay, for anybody who was out there. The truth is, school buses are the safest vehicles on the road. Number one. The safest vehicles. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, children traveling on buses rather than traveling by car are 70 times more likely to get to school safely. How about that? So, yeah, the school bus. Stop driving your kids to school. Would you please stop that practice? It's terrible. And not only are you driving to school, you're driving to school in your completely obstructed SUV where you can't see what you're looking at because the car is just too darn big. And this is, the reason I rant about this and talk about this so much is because I ride a bicycle and I'm scared to death of your foolish vehicle. You know what? It makes no sense to me. It's a death machine in my world, and it's a death machine in a pedestrian's world. It's not a good choice of vehicle if you're out buying a new vehicle right now. You will not be any safer in that vehicle, and the people outside of that vehicle will be far less safe. So please make a solid consideration here. Better yet, ride your bike. How about that? Let's ride our bikes instead. I like that idea. You know me. I'm a bike guy. That's what I like to do. That's what I like to transport myself with. Yes, I still use a car. Yes, I am aware of the fact that, you know, I can't completely, or I refuse to completely not use the car. That's my choice. And it's a lot of people's choices, but I do commute with my bike whenever I can. And I also use my bike not only in for just recreational purposes, but also for running errands and doing things like that. So it's a solution. You don't need the big vehicle. As far as the big truck goes, everybody talks about their big trucks. Well, I gotta have a truck, I gotta go to the lumber yard, I gotta go to the dump, I gotta, you know, go do this and I gotta go do that. No, you don't. I have a nifty little 4x8 trailer, which is bigger than 90% of the beds on today's pickup trucks, because today's pickup trucks all come with short beds. Worthless. And I have a little trailer, and I can put a lot of stuff in that little trailer, and I can haul it behind my car, and I don't need a truck. And what do I use it for? It's to go to the dump, use it to go to the lumber yard. I use it to go to the gravel yard to pick up some gravel. I can go pick up landscaping supplies with it. I can do all sorts of things with this trailer, and I don't need a truck. Additionally, I don't pay taxes on a truck. I do pay taxes for the trailer, though, oddly enough. I do that. But the other thing is, if you're going to a big event and you're the person who's transporting all the bicycles, you can put a lot more bicycles in the trailer than you can in your car or on your car. Hello. It's not that hard. It's really not that hard. So anyway, I regress. Digress. Sorry. The big thing here is that you don't need a giant car. And I'm really big on this giant car problem. It really drives me nuts. Anyway, we're going to move on more in the school accident thing here, because this just drives me insane that I keep hearing about kids getting hurt around school zones. When I was with the Connecticut Bicycle Coalition, we used to do a safe route to schools, which was basically, they're still doing these things now. There's a lot of organizations out there that are still promoting safe routes to schools to make it easier and safer for you to have your children walking and or riding their bicycles to school. And a lot of it has to do with elimination of cars around school zones, because that's where the real problem is. And there are some schools that are really, 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 really pushing hard and promoting drop-off of students a block or two blocks away from the school, so they have to walk the rest of the way, making it a whole lot safer in front of the schools. The only thing they have to watch out for are the buses, and the buses are, as we just said, 70% safer than cars. 70%. So there you go. And that distracted walking problem, well, that's a cell phone issue. That's a plugged in issue. And maybe it really is time to start unplugging our kids from our devices or their devices. I know there are now schools that are actually prohibiting the use of cell phone use in a school environment, in the school. So their distraction goes down. Guess what? The grades are going up. The attention span is going up. Everything is changing because the distraction is taken away. I'm a classic distraction guy. I am ADHD. If there's something going on behind me, there's a screen right up here behind me. I see things flash up on it. I'm constantly looking over at it. I just very easily get distracted. So I have to stay very hyper-focused in order to not be distracted by my screen. So anyway, there are so many things here that we could go to. But anyway, there's more. But wait, there's more. Let's go on here. Dangerous streets outside schools threaten children. Yes, this is from Streets Blog, New York City. I just talked to someone this morning. She just joined my spin class this morning. She's been living in New York City for the past 5 years. and she just moved back into the area, and she was teaching at Columbia University in New York. And she said she pretty much gave up riding her bicycle in New York City. Gave it up. She used to ride her bike everywhere. She used to commute all the time. But she said that the abuse that is happening in the streets of New York with e-bicycles and e-cargo machines that delivery people are using, she said, it's just frightening to ride your bike there. It's not safe anymore. That's a little disturbing to me. That, you know, we've solved one problem by cutting down on the number of cars that are on the streets, but we've put people riding e-bikes, e-powered bicycles out there instead, and they're just as dangerous as the cars were. At least they are only going 20 miles per hour. That's the only positive thing I have to say about that. But she's so happy to be back in our area because she said, it's so nice to ride your bike here. She said, it's beautiful. She said, there's no cars. And I went, yeah, there's cars. But we have a lot more cars right now because the University of Connecticut just opened up. And we have quite a few more cars that are in the area. And and I'm telling you, with higher education brings people with less common sense. I had two cars, not one car, two cars, as I was driving my car back from the community center this morning after teaching my class at the speed limit, because I'm very cautious about that. I had two cars pull out right in front of me. Probably because I wasn't driving fast enough for them to anticipate being hit by me. So they go, oh, this guy's doing the speed limit. I'm just going to pull out right in front of him. So keep your eyes open, folks. They're back. If you live in this area, I warn you, they're back. And it gets a little wackier here as far as safety on the roads go when the students return, because we have this influx of tens of thousands of kids that aren't from around these parts, many of them, and so therefore they drive like they did when they were in their parts, which is probably not a rural atmosphere like we have here. Enough. Too many opinions this morning. Oh well, it happens. So the deaths on the streets are a huge, huge problem in New York City. And New York City, you know, this is the city that's had the big thing about trying to put a tax on people who would drive into Manhattan and you know, make it more expensive to bring your car into the city, therefore maybe eliminating some of the cars in the city, like some of the top cities in the world have done, which has been a big, big difference for safety. Number one, safety. Safety of people that are pedestrians and cyclists. This is the big thing. A Streets Blog study, they had data on nearly 1 million car crashes in New York from 2015 through 2021, built a database of every collision that occurred within 250 feet of a city-run public school. The analysis revealed on school days, streets near schools are more dangerous on average than other city streets. During an 8 a.m. hour when hundreds of thousands of students stream into a 1,600 city-run public school, there are 57% more crashes and 25% more injuries per mile on the streets near the schools than on the city's other streets. This disparity largely disappears on days when schools are closed. Who's doing all the driving? I'm not going to repeat it. You've already heard it enough. Streets are especially dangerous outside schools where most students are poor or children of color. In the 2019 school year, for example, the rate of people injured by drivers on school days was 43% higher outside school buildings where a majority of students were brown or black than outside school buildings where majority white students. Crashes are more common too. These disparities have existed for years. Here's another bullet point. Drivers crash nearly 50 times and injure a dozen people near city public schools during the average day when schools are open. That's a crash every 29 minutes and an injury every 2 hours. The chaos peaks during the hours when children arrive at school in the morning and leave in the afternoon. At those times, there is a crash near a school every 17 minutes and an injury every 72 minutes. So you can see why this is happening. You can see that, you know, driving your child to school may be extremely convenient for you, but really not a wise decision. And what are you teaching your kids? You're teaching your kids that getting onto a school bus and being socially active with the other passenger in the school bus is a bad idea. Not good. This is we're doing this backwards, folks. We need more public transportation. We need safer streets out there. We need to be riding our bicycles more. That's the answer. It's the answer in so many other places in the world, and we in the United States, we just completely reject the idea. I'm not saying we ignore it. We reject it. We actually do. It's terrible. It's terrible, and it shouldn't be that way. So, I just don't know how to put this any other way. I think I've probably pretty much beaten this horse to death. But anyway, there are such greater and better ways of doing it. It's an awareness thing. If you can put together in your neighborhood, if you can put together a bike bus, that would be a really, really cool thing. That's where you take you get a couple of different parents, maybe four parents involved, and you put them in the front of the group, and you put them in the back of the group, and you put all the kids in the center and let them all ride together into the school, just like they would be if they were on a bus, except they're on bicycles and they're protected and they're obvious because they're going to take up a lot of space. They're going to take up a lane of traffic, and it just opens people's eyes to the fact that there's a better way. There's always a better way. So the risk is still there, but it's, you know, there are ways of reducing it. And one of the big things is traffic calming. We've got to calm the neighborhoods down. We've got to make it so that if you have a vehicle which is extra large, it's almost impossible to drive it on the street because it's so big. Make the streets narrower, make them more bike worthy, less car worthy. There's your solution. It's not going to be that big a deal. So if the streets got narrower near the schools, then the streets would slow down near the schools. So this is like a really, really important thing. So I hope that people will pay attention to this and maybe even talk to their school board about it and maybe talk about the fact that having a safe location to drop kids off further away from the school, if you're not a bus, then maybe that's a good requirement. It has happened and it has worked in some cities and some areas where if this particular practice happens, it really breaks down and drops down the injury issues of kids when they're trying to get to school. And if they have to walk two blocks to get to school, what's the big deal? Especially if it's safe. And that can be monitored. That just requires some teachers getting out there. Our local grammar school, the woman who greets all the kids is she's the gym teacher. And Betsy is like, she's awesome. You know, all the kids love to see Betsy in the morning when they get off the bus. There's Betsy. She greets them, brings them in. And you could put up a barrage of teachers within a two or three block area that could make sure that the kids safely get themselves to school. This is not rocket science, folks. It's really simple common sense stuff. So anyway, I had to bring it up because it's back to school time and we keep looking at other ways of transporting our kids back and forth to school that are safe. So anyway, I'm going to move on now because we got a really, really important race going on right now called the Vuelta a España. And it has been quite a race. Oh my God. I saw a rider the other day receive a bike change before the climb. And the climb, the reason he received the bike change before the climb was because it had a one-by gear on it. The front chain ring, I think, was smaller than the rear cog in the back. It was unbelievable. And it might have been Wout van Aert, but I can't remember which rider it was that received the bike change, but he received the bike change before they got close to the climb, just so he would have the gearing to be able to handle the climb. Because the gearing, the climb went up to 24%. That's like, to understand how hard 24% is, I want you to take a look at the stairs in your house. Okay, that's a good guess, right? Your stairs in your house, should they be a ramp instead of stairs, are about 22%. This climb was 24%. This climb was so steep that the motorcycle, the support motorcycle, I watched the driver of this motorcycle, and he's got support, he's got a camera person on the back, he's got a big heavy bike, but he's, you know, able to ride along with the riders because they have the room to do that. He had to put his feet down a couple of times just to maintain the balance on the motorcycle because he was going so slow. So just to give you an idea, that's really, really, really steep. And we're talking about people that can walk faster in situations like this sometimes. Although at 24%, nobody can really walk much faster. But just amazing, amazing things going on. So we have stage 16 today. Ben O'Connor is still in the lead as of the beginning of the show. I have not paid attention up to this point, and I won't be able to pay attention to it until later on today because I have to go down and work on the cyclocross course this afternoon. But anyway, there is there's going to be some interesting stuff going on because Primoz Roglic has been chipping away at the lead. Unfortunately, and this just came out, and a little spoiler alert here if you haven't heard it already, but it was mentioned during rest day. Primoz was given a 20-second penalty for following a support vehicle too closely. So, oops. Don't do that. 20 seconds could be the meaning between winning and second place in a race or being out of the podium. So I would say that was probably not a real good move on his part, although I have watched many, many sticky bottles occurring. And what's the difference between a sticky bottle and a rider sitting on the back of a support vehicle and drafting? Once again, the UCI has very strange rules, including socks. I'll not mention that too many times. I mention it a lot. So anyway, there's just a lot of stuff going on right now. So what is this cycling up to date? Live blog. Okay, I don't watch this because it's live. I don't need to see this right now. So we're gonna have to go back. I want to go back to the official route. Because today we are on stage 16, and where are we? Read more. Yeah, here we go. Stage 16 is dubbed as a mountain stage, and it is not opening up. Not good. That's no good. So stage 16 will be right here. So let's open this up. Follow the stage live. No, I don't want to know it live. What I want to do is I want to take and see if I can explode this up a little bit. So the profile on this is a 181-kilometer race, okay? 181 kilometers, and it has two category ones, and then to finish the race, a beyond category climb. Not pleasant at all. And it is just a monster at the end. It's going to be, I think I had a breakdown on this somewhere here. Stage preview 16, was it here? No, just no. This is not going to come up to here. So anyway, it had, yeah, except cookies. Hate cookies. I mean, I love cookies, but, you know, it's really kind of annoying. So anyway, some of these, oh gosh, I just lost my page. So anyway, this stage is going to be yet another one of these crazy, stupid, steep, monster stages. And it should be really, really interesting to see. And it's, you know, we are just looking at profiles of just ugliness. So will there be attacks today? Absolutely. Will there be changes in the GC today? Maybe. Could happen. But there's more coming. There's definitely a lot more coming. So this week, I mean, we are not done yet. There goes my page again. We have stage 17, which is 141.5 kilometers, and it will be a what appears to be relatively flat in some places, but two category two climbs, so a couple of big bumps right in the middle of it, right around 50 kilometers, 54 kilometers, and 70 kilometers. There's a couple of very big steep climbs in that one. So there we have it, more and more. And then we're going to go back here again. That's stage 18. One of these is a queen stage, if I remember correctly. And this might be stage 18, medium mountains. No, that's not the queen stage if it's medium mountains. And it has a couple of category ones, and it's very rolly. So it doesn't look too terrible at 180 kilometers. Still 180 kilometers, no question about that. And then we go to stage 19. Maybe it's one of these. I know there's one here that was supposed to be hilly uphill arrival on stage 19, 173.5 kilometers. And yeah, again, not terrible, a category three climb, and the finishing climb is a category one climb. And not particularly long, but definitely it's got some good a good climb to it. So, and then stage 20, is that what's coming up here? Stage 19, stage 20, 172 kilometers. And this one is dubbed as a gut-crushing climb. One, two category threes, two category twos, two category ones, three category ones. And the last category one, of course, is at the finish at 172 kilometers. It looks like a sawtooth. It's just one after another. It's going to be a pounding day in the saddle for these guys. And of course, we're getting very, very close to the end here. And the final stage will be a time trial of 24 kilometers, I think, something like that. So a short time trial. Still not pleasant, but, you know, just because these guys are going to be pretty cooked by then. So we'll see what happens, but there's a lot of jagged climbs. There's not big sprinting stages coming up. Not really. You know, there's some that are leveled out a little bit, and there will still be some sprints, and there'll be some breakaways. They're going to attempt to gain some time and all, but Primoz Roglic is not that far behind, and so it should be a very, very, very interesting Vuelta, and I think that I just can't wait. I just can't wait. It just gets better and better. Current standings as of rest day, which was yesterday. Ben O'Connor from Australia and the Decathlon team, otherwise known as AGR2. He has the lead still, 60 hours, 19 minutes, 22 seconds. Second place was Primoz Roglic, and he was 43 seconds behind him, so very, very close. Now, I don't know if this piece of information, which I have in front of me, was before or after his 20-second penalty. So if it was before his 20-second penalty, then he's really like a minute and three behind. But still, he's in striking distance, and Primoz can really... he can really ride a bike. There's no question about that. So we'll see what happens. Enrique Mas, the guy who last week I talked about his outstanding bike handling, where he nose-wheelied the front end of his bicycle and then somehow captured the rear wheel back down onto the ground, skidded to a stop after losing control going into a corner. He's in third place. He's down 2 minutes and 23 seconds from the red jersey. Richard Carapaz, who's been having a fabulous, fabulous tour. He is in fourth place, 2 minutes and 44 seconds down. So here we go. I mean, 20-second difference between third and fourth. There's still a lot of race going on here, a whole lot of race going on here. And it's, you know, we got a week to go here, So we'll see what happens. The last day is the same day as my cyclocross race, so I will not be watching the last day, but that is a time trial, and I have seen big races like this won and lost on the time trial. And it's just, if you're in contention, if you're up in the GC, you got to be able to turn the legs over by yourself. You got to be able to do a good time trial, because you could win or lose your race off of it. I've seen riders lose up to a minute in GC and lose up to a minute on the time trial, which has been remarkable to watch. Let's see. Fifth place is Mikel Landa. Yeah, Mikel Landa's always been a very, very respectable rider. I really like watching him. He's a solid, solid rider. And he rides for the T-Rex Quick-Step team. He's 3 minutes and 5 seconds behind. So he's not any more than, well, look at this. 2:23 for Enrique Mas, which is third place. And he's 42 seconds behind third place. There's a lot to happen here. There's a whole lot to happen here. When you go to number six, that's Florian Lipwitz, and he is 4 minutes and 33 seconds down. David Godeau is 4 minutes and 39 seconds down. Listen to these times. Carlos Rodriguez is 4 minutes and 40 seconds down, and ninth is Marius Gelmos, and he is 4 minutes and 51 seconds down. These guys are on top of one another. Anything can happen in the next week. Anything can happen. A crash can make a big difference. Someone having an outstanding day in the saddle can make quite a difference. These guys are all, I see the top nine riders, even the top 10 riders. The top 10 rider is Pavel Sivakov, and he's 5 minutes and 12 seconds down. They're all pretty close, considering what's in front of them this week. So, can't wait. Love watching this stuff. It's great. I watch it in my spare time, because right now I'm in race brain. So, because I'm putting on a race. So, we'll see what happens there. But, yeah, this is just all just really, really, really great stuff. And what was this stage proof? Oh, maybe this is what I was looking for earlier. See if it'll pop up and make sense. Yeah. So anyway, it was just basically showing that same profile I was talking about. I thought there was a breakdown here. They had a breakdown on each and every climb, which I had found earlier, but seems to have disappeared from my screen. So unfortunately, I do not have that in front of me, but it was brutal. All I can say is that Beyond Category climb at the end of today's race is just going to be that will make the difference right there. Somebody's going to do something there, and there's going to be an awful lot of, there's going to be a lot of pain delivered, that's for sure. And it should be very, very interesting to see. So, And so let's move on to a quick little piece of attention to the bicycle retail side of things here. And going to bicycle retailer, I can tell you that it's generally pretty quiet. The Park Service is reaffirming an e-bike use, and that should be determined by individual superintendents. So the National Park Service is trying to figure out whether e-bikes should be allowed in the national parks or not. I think the reason is because they're concerned about trail usage and having the, you know, the bikes being in a place they're not supposed to be. It all comes down to, we've got this great growing concern, and I'll say concern at this point, but e-bikes. Okay, and e-bikes are, I think they're wonderful. I think they put a lot more people on bicycles that would have, at this point, given up on bicycles. And so, therefore, I find them to be a very, very useful piece of equipment. And I like the idea a whole lot. But riding them responsibly, whenever you give someone the opportunity to have more power, things can go wrong. With power comes compromise and maturity. And, you know, going out and riding your e-assist bicycle like you're in the Tour de France is not the reason why they made the bicycle in the first place, okay? They made it to help you and to assist you when you got to places that were more difficult than what you could normally handle. It doesn't mean they're going to make you into a Grand Theft Auto crazy person. All right, I like to mention some video games sometimes on these things. It just makes no sense at all. So yeah, if you can ride your bike responsibly and you're in a national park setup, then good. That's really, really good. But, you know, there's only so much you can do to control the human spirit. And unfortunately, the human spirit sometimes is far more competitive than it needs to be. And so therefore, you know, that's what we have. The result is obvious. So it's looking like the bicycle industry is actually rather boring at the moment. I don't see a whole lot on here that usually catches my attention. I will go to the opinion page because you never know. Yeah, there is a comment here about the new normal in the bicycle industry. It's a lot more normal than you think it is. And this is by Rick Vosper, who is a good, really nice writer for the for Bicycle Retailer. And, you know, he tends to evaluate things and looks at, you know, what's going on in the national front and jittery stock markets and you know, the overabundance of product in the industry right now due to the COVID makeup time, that is causing a bit of a problem. So, according to People for Bikes and the National Sporting Goods Association, ridership is holding steady at a COVID era level, and it's higher than it's been since 2005. So the news is not so much doom and gloom, but it's more of kind of a mixed bag. You know, those of us who have been following the industry and near and dear to it for so many years have been we're thinking when the whole COVID thing hit and everybody just started scrambling, going out finding bikes, and they were fixing up used bikes and everything was going crazy, and you couldn't get your bike into a bike shop to save yourself, and the bike shops couldn't turn them over fast enough. And we looked at it and went, it's a boom. This is it. This is where it's going to, this is where people are going to actually learn that the bicycle is a better way to get themselves around than using a car or even mass transportation. That's really what took the hit on that one, was the mass transportation, because people were less inclined to get onto a public bus during COVID, but they still needed to, you know, essential workers still needed to get to work. So they started riding their bikes instead because it was safer, because two reasons. Number one, you weren't right next to someone else with your masks on and all that, which we know the masks worked so-so, but better than nothing. And number two, there were less cars on the road because everybody was staying home because of the COVID thing. So it was safer to go out and ride your bicycle back in those days. It was not safer to drive your car back then, though. There was a really big jump in automobile accidents and injuries and deaths, which is kind of weird. And I think that attributes to the fact that people, when they feel powerless, tend to have to go out and, you know, exert their power. And COVID tended to throw a powerless type of atmosphere upon people. Therefore, they drove their cars like crazy. And then they smacked into things and died. And that's, once again, that's why they have speed limits. Hello. There's actually people who study this and try to figure it out so that they figure out the safe ways of doing things. So with the exception of the pandemic years, sales into dealers has remained fairly constant. But in 2018, the ratio of inventory dollars to sell was 2.91. As of June of 2024, it was 4.11. The sell-in dollars are definitely up, and it's about 8% higher, and so but it was also 35% lower than 4 years since the pandemic. So it's just like I said, it's just like a roller coaster right now. And supplier inventory, is somewhere within 1% of 2017 and 2019 levels, but the dollar inventory, which is what the chart shows, is 74% to 131% higher. So a similar level of total bikes are in the supplier inventory compared to the pre-pandemic, but they're simply skewed much more expensive now. That would be a big thank you to the June 1st tariff increase of 25% on imported goods to this country. There's some imported goods that it makes sense to have tariffs on. There are other imported goods that we just don't make here that we should not be putting tariffs on. Just my opinion. I have lots of them. But you know what? The bicycle is not what should be tariffing. It's a sensible means of transportation and recreation, and I can go on down the list. You know me, I'm a bike guy. I live and breathe by bicycles, and so to me it makes no sense. But anyway, that's what's going on in the bike industry. Once again, I will tell you this, and not that my old retailers would like me to be advertising this to you right now, although this is the time of year where it's okay to start saying this, is if you're looking for a bike, this is a great time to buy one because inventory is high, and yeah, that means prices come down. Supply is high, demand is low. What's that mean? Prices drop. It's all good. It's all good stuff. So now is a really good time to buy a bicycle. You'll find some pretty good deals out there. So let's go to our events page. Yeah, the Welts is still on until the 8th. Woohoo! Here we go. The 8th of this month. We're into September already. Yep, we are. The CCAP Rocky Hill Cyclocross Training Series is on Wednesday nights. The first one was on August 28th. The second one is September 4th, which is yet tomorrow, and the 18th and the 25th. And the Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series is coming this fall. Yeah, well, it's here because the season opener is this weekend. This weekend at Damned at the Dam. Yes, there we are. There it is. It will be on September 8th, 2024 at Mansfield Hollow State Park. It's on Bike Ridge. If you need to find out more about it, you can go to the Facebook page. You can click on links there. It'll guide you over there. But it's the opening race, and we will be featuring a food truck, and also my friends at Click Kitchen are serving free coffee and hot chocolate all day long. So hello, come on down. And if you're if you've been a fan of Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross over the years, you know we have a free food table. Also, if you'd like to contribute to the free food table, we are always open for donations to the free food table. Remember, it's for free. Do something nice. Bake some cookies, brownies, good, anything, whatever you got, whatever you got. Fruit, we'll take fruit. I'm probably going to go to BJ's and pick up a few other things too, just to keep everybody happy. But anyway, definitely something to look at. So check us out. We are this Sunday, and we are on and live and ready to go. And we've got some new exciting things that we've added to it. The Tour Apicum. Apicum? I don't know how to say that exactly. So anyway, they reached out to me, and they asked me if I could tell my fellow cycling friends and listeners about the event, and it is Sunday, September 15th, and they have a website of www.touropacum.org, and a Bike Reg registration page, too, so you can go there, too, and find out more. Let's see what else is coming up. We have a whole bunch of races coming up for the Project Mayhem Cyclocross, and I seem to have buried my event sheet here, but there are more coming, and I will mention them next week after our race is over, and make sure that you guys stay on course with our 7-race cyclocross series, and it's Mischief, Mayhem, Harmony, Cyclocross. It's all good stuff. Anyway, hope to see you there. If you do come out to the race, I highly encourage you to bring a very loud cowbell or even a little tiny cowbell. I don't care. Encourage the riders on. It's a really cool event. It's really fun to be outside. Mansfield Hollow State Park is a wonderful place, and you should come by and check it out. Also, Lime Rock Park Epic, Sunday, October 8th in Lakeville, Connecticut. And that is at the Lime Rock Raceway. And it's a gravel ride, an epic 68-mile course with 5,000 feet of elevation, 14 gravel sections, 5 of which will be timed and 2 rest stops. The Explorer is a 53-mile course, 3,600 feet of elevation and 10 gravel sections, 4 of which will be timed and 2 rest stops. And the Express is an 18-mile route with 1,100 feet of elevation, 2 gentle dirt road sections, perfect for those new to gravel, and 1 water stop. So check it on out. Finishing points. What is with this crazy, you know, thing around the schools? You know, you just people slow down, park the cars. Don't drive your kids to school. Let them use the bus. It's 70% safer than your automobile is. Do the math. Do the statistics. Check it out, please. I'm going to move on. The Vuelta a España. It's great. It's great. I can't wait. We got another big week of excitement in front of us. So 2024, what's your plan? More miles, ride and commute to work or around town, better fitness, or simply enjoying your bike rides? You take more by slowing down and smelling the roses. That's what Fran and I did yesterday. Nice 18-mile ride. Very nice. I'll say it again. It won't be the last time. You got to get loud. You got to get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride. And talk to your local officials. Park your car or truck for a day. Ride your bicycle instead. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk. My name is Peddlin' Ron. You can reach me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information, reach out to me by email. This is Peddlin' Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.